And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. The show is, again, available wherever you get your podcasts. This morning, our show is brought to you by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. We'll have more from The Law Group coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. We've got a busy day across North Carolina politics. We'll get into those details coming up here in just a couple of minutes. But of course, we start off this morning with a horrific tragedy unfolding in New York City last night as a lone gunman walked into a Midtown Manhattan high-rise office building yesterday afternoon, evening, and opened fire, killing four people, including an NYPD officer, before turning the gun on himself. Speaking at a press conference late last night, New York City Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch identified the shooter as a 27-year-old Las Vegas resident with a history of mental health issues. His name, Shane Tarama. And here is how it was broken down by the NYPD commissioner last night in this, horrific situation unfolding in the Big Apple.
Between 51st and 52nd Streets, carrying an M4 rifle in his right hand, he walks towards the building's entrance. That individual was seen exiting the BMW alone. The building security camera footage shows the shooter enter the lobby, turn right, and immediately open fire on an NYPD officer. He then shoots a woman who took cover behind a pillar and proceeds through the lobby, spraying it with gunfire. He makes his way to the elevator bank, where he shoots a security guard who was taking cover behind the security desk. One additional male is shot in the lobby, per his own statement from the hospital. The shooter then calls the elevator, which opens in the lobby. A female exits that elevator, and he allows her to walk past him unharmed. He goes up to the 33rd floor, which is Root and Management, and begins to walk the floor, firing rounds as he traveled. One person was struck and killed on that floor. He then proceeds down a hallway and shoots himself in the chest. In total, we have five victims shot, our officer and four other innocent civilians, plus the shooter. The shooter is believed to be Shane Tarama, a 27-year-old male with a Las Vegas address. The vehicle he exited is registered in Nevada to Mr. Tarama. Inside of that vehicle, officers found a rifle case with rounds, a loaded revolver, ammunition and magazines, a backpack, and medication prescribed to Mr. Tarama. The vehicle was searched by our bomb squad and found to be clear of any explosives. The initial investigation shows that Mr. Tamora's vehicle traveled cross-country through Colorado on July 26th, then Nebraska and Iowa on July 27th, and then in Columbia, New Jersey, as recently as 4:24 p.m. today. The vehicle entered New York City shortly thereafter. According to our law enforcement partners in Las Vegas, Mr. Tarama has a documented mental health history. His motives are still under investigation, and we are working to understand why he targeted this particular location. 345 Park Avenue is a commercial office building whose tenants include the NFL, Root and Management, KPMG, and Blackstone. At this time, four of the five victims are deceased, including our NYPD cop. Our officer was transported here to New York Presbyterian along with one male civilian, the lone shooting survivor, who is in critical but stable condition at this time. Two other civilians, one male and one female, both deceased, were brought to Bellevue. The fourth civilian is a female who was found dead on the 33rd floor of the location. Additionally, there are four other victims being treated for minor injuries sustained in their attempts to flee the scene. Victims' names are being withheld at this time, pending family notification. Officers from our Special Operations Division are currently conducting a secondary sweep of the entire building. I want to be very clear. We believe this to be a lone shooter, and there is no longer an active threat to the public. But today, four innocent victims are dead. Among them is NYPD police officer Didarul Islam, 36 years old, 4 years on the job. Officer Islam was married with two young boys, and his wife is pregnant with their third child. He's assigned to the 4-7 precinct in the Bronx. He was doing the job that we asked him to do. He put himself in harm's way. He made the ultimate sacrifice, shot in cold blood, wearing a uniform that stood for the promise that he made to this city.
An absolutely horrific situation unfolding in New York City. This was, again, this was around 10:30 last night when this press conference took place in New York City. As the hours went on overnight, there is apparently a suicide note that was found. I don't know if it was found on the shooter's body or if it was found in his car that was left in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. Seemingly indicates that he suffered from CTE, which is, of course, been a big time discussion and a big time conversation around the NFL over the last couple of years. You've seen the National Football League and many other, you know, colleges and even down into high school levels talking about CTE, trying to improve the helmets that players wear to not have them suffer from this. So this attack seemingly was sparring or seemingly revolved around the NFL and some of these CTE injuries, some of these mental health issues that this individual was dealing with. The shooter then turned the gun on himself, so we won't ever hear from him as to exactly what the motive was. But again, this suicide note being reported by ABC News this morning reads that the note also made references to the National Football League CTE or chronic traumatic. The CTE is a degenerative brain disease linked to repeated blows to the head and concussions. CTE can only be diagnosed through a brain autopsy after death. So it seems like that this was a very much a targeted attack at the NFL, who does have offices in that Midtown Manhattan building. Five people losing their lives, four innocent civilians, the fifth, of course, being the shooter, one of those being an NYPD officer, 4 years on the job. And as you heard from the commissioner there, his wife currently pregnant, two small children. I mean, it's just an unimaginable tragedy and story unfolding. Unfortunately, this morning, a lot more questions than answers that we actually have as the days go on and as we mourn the loss of a member of the New York City Police Department and those innocent civilians. More information will come out as law enforcement. Unfortunately, they don't have time to grieve. They've got to pick up the pieces and continue with their investigation. Fortunately, the scene was secured pretty quickly by law enforcement, and they were able to mitigate any other death or destruction. This is a pretty horrific situation that unfolded last night. Those are the details as we have them this morning. I would imagine we're going to get some more over the next couple of days as we get those details. And as they are relevant, we will, of course, pass them along to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. A sad story and really some chilling video, as you heard the NYPD commissioner noting. You know, they could essentially track this guy's movement through the entire building, as you would imagine, with a high-rise skyscraper in Midtown Manhattan, surveillance all over the place. Pictures of the shooter walking up to the door, looking very calm, cool, and casual with an M4 rifle on his right hip, walking into the lobby, immediately killing an NYPD officer and spraying the lobby of the building. Then, and this is one of the weird details, as he was waiting for the elevator, a woman was coming down. He let her off the elevator. She ran out of the building and he went upstairs and then, of course, went on to slay and kill three additional people. So this is a pretty tragic scene. We'll continue to track the details and follow those right here on the Nick Craig Show. As I mentioned, we have a busy day in North Carolina politics as we watch a couple of things going on in the General Assembly today. 14 veto overrides likely, well, I don't know if all of them will pass, but 14 veto overrides are on the calendar this morning out at the General Assembly. The Senate is set to begin their business in a little more than an hour, 8:30 this morning. The House is set to convene at 9 a.m. as they will, the Republicans in the General Assembly will deal with those 14 overrides. There are a variety of issues from DEI in both K through 12 and higher education, reducing some burdensome regulation as it relates to as it relates to carbon emissions and carbon goals across the state of North Carolina, constitutional carry, a lot of very important issues for Republicans and conservatives across the state of North Carolina. We will be laser focused on that throughout the day. Stay up to date with that. You can follow me on X if you're not already doing so, at Nicholas M. Craig. I'll be posting videos and clips and updates on all of those veto overrides as we go through your Tuesday. All of that available over at x.com/Nicholas M. Craig, and we'll watch that and, of course, have full analysis and recap coming up for you tomorrow morning. Well, it is now official. Former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper is running for the United States Senate. That was the big rumor last week across the state of North Carolina. It was seemingly a done deal. We were just waiting for that official announcement. And as we were getting off the air yesterday morning, right around 8 o'clock, the former governor's team blasted out a video on social media and on email lists and on all over the place with his official announcement video. I'm going to play the video. It's 2.5 minutes. I'm not going to cut it off. We're going to listen to it in its entirety. We'll break down some of the details that Governor Roy Cooper talks about, and then we will catch up with Andrew Dunn. He is over at Longleaf Politics. We'll get some analysis from him coming up here. But before we get into any of that, let's hear directly from the man himself. Here's former Governor Roy Cooper in his Senate campaign announcement video yesterday.
It wasn't always this hard, because being in the middle class meant something. You could afford a home. Your kids went to good schools. Your job paid enough to cover the basics. And most summers, you could get away for a few days. For the most part, life was pretty good. I'm Roy Cooper. And I know that today, for too many Americans, the middle class feels like a distant dream. Meanwhile, the biggest corporations and the richest Americans have grabbed unimaginable wealth at your expense. It's time for that to change. I grew up in Nash County, working on the farm every summer. My mom was a public school teacher, my dad a small town lawyer and farmer. It's where I started my family, taught Sunday school for years, and started my law practice that helped everyday people and small businesses. When you made me your attorney general, I prosecuted criminals and took on scammers, big banks, and drug companies. When you made me your governor, we balanced the state budget every year and worked with Republicans to raise teacher pay, recruit thousands of better-paying jobs, and expand Medicaid to more than 650,000 working North Carolinians. But right now, our country's facing a moment as fragile as any I can remember. And the decisions we make in the next election will determine if we even have a middle class in America anymore. I never really wanted to go to Washington. I just wanted to serve the people of North Carolina right here, where I've lived all my life. But these are not ordinary times. Politicians in D.C. are running up our debt, ripping away our health care, disrespecting our veterans, cutting health for the poor, and even putting Medicare and Social Security at risk just to give tax breaks to billionaires. That's wrong, and I've had enough. I've thought on it and prayed about it, and I've decided I want to serve as your next United States Senator, because even now, I still believe our best days are ahead of us. I love North Carolina, and I know you do too. I need you to be with us, and I can't wait to see you out there.
Okay, so I promised that I would play it in its entirety and let you listen to the uninterrupted 2.5 minutes from the governor. That was a hard thing to sit here and keep my mouth shut on. But that there's the announcement. So he didn't want to go to Washington, D.C. Ah, shucks, old Roy Cooper, just a small old farm boy from Nash County. Didn't want to do it, but we're not in ordinary times anymore. And Washington, D.C. is running up the debt, which, of course, Democrats had no responsibility and no part in it all. So Roy Cooper can fix that. Roy Cooper balanced the budget. Roy Cooper fought for teacher pay increases. And, you know, one of the things that I found very interesting in his commentary was discussing tax breaks and helping businesses, helping big business, right? This is one of the issues that the left deals with all of the time, right? They hate business. They hate capitalism. They want to be part of this weird socialist utopia / communist fantasy where, you know, everybody's wealthy and the government provides all of these great services. And, you know, it was pointed out to me yesterday that under Governor Roy Cooper's watch, he directed the state of North Carolina to provide corporate incentives to major businesses, some of the most profitable and successful businesses across the United States. Case in point, Monday, April the 26th, 2021, Governor Roy Cooper announces that Apple will create 3,000 jobs in Wake County. How is this possible? Well, the state of North Carolina attracted Apple by giving them tax breaks and tax incentives, giving them a job development investment grant, or a JDIG grant, approved by the state's Economic Investment Committee, that is expected to generate 3,000 new jobs and will provide the company potential reimbursements of up to $845.8 million. So how is it that Roy Cooper is going to make the claim that Washington, D.C. is selling out the middle class, is selling out veterans and those that are on low-income programs throughout the country, selling those people out in favor of big business, yet under Roy Cooper's watch, this is just one of these JDIG examples, and the JDIG program is a complete and utter freaking disaster for North Carolina. But under his watch, under his approval, the state of North Carolina authorized Apple, which is one of the largest companies in the world, giving them almost an $850 million tax break. How can those two things exist at the same time? You can't tell me that you're for the little guy, that you're, aw shucks, fighting for middle-class North Carolinians. Meanwhile, you were giving major, major tax breaks to the one at the time, the largest corporation in the world, in Apple. How can that exist? And this is just one example of this entire 2.5-minute campaign video that is completely delusional, that is not based in seemingly any fact or reality of what exactly went on in North Carolina under Roy Cooper's watch. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the former governor tries to spin his record, which is less than stellar, into everything is hunky-dory, everything was fine under my watch, and that's why I need to go to Washington, D.C. And so that's going to be a very key thing to keep an eye on as we watch this Senate race unfold here across North Carolina. Former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper made it official on Monday that he is dropping into the United States Senate race, which will be coming up November of next year across the state of North Carolina. To get some more analysis on that this morning, it's my pleasure to welcome Andrew Dunn to the Nick Craig Show this morning. Andrew is over at Longleaf Politics, also a contributor over at the Charlotte and News and Observer. Andrew, thank you so much for the time. I want to go through a piece that you've got up this morning on your website, longleafpol.com. I try to see the best in people. Roy Cooper makes that really hard. That's quite a headline. Explain what you mean by that in your piece.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor to talk with you. Basically, my brand of writing, I try to be reasonable, fairly, I'm unapologetically conservative, but I also try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt because I really believe that politics works better that way. But my argument here is I have a really hard doing really hard time doing that with former Governor Roy Cooper. There's just such a disconnect between the image that he puts out and the reality behind the scenes. And, you know, the truth is that most North Carolinians really haven't experienced the real Roy Cooper. They've seen press conference Roy, they've seen TV ad Roy, but they haven't seen politician Roy. And I'm excited because for the first time in this Senate race, he's going to be going up against, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of advertising that's going to show North Carolina the real Roy Cooper.
You know, and that's an interesting point that I've seen a lot is that, you know, while he's, yes, been very successful in running elections, served in the AG's office for a number of years, two very successful gubernatorial elections in the state, many have made the point, Andrew, and I think you get to this in your piece, he hasn't necessarily been battle tested on more of the national stage. And from all estimates and rumors, this is going to be the most expensive United States Senate race in history. You can imagine hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be flowing into this state. And it's going to be hard for old Teflon Roy to maybe deal with some of the things that are less than stellar on his record, which you outline in your piece. There's quite a laundry list of issues.
Yeah, there's plenty of ground to cover. But you're right. I mean, in all of his races, especially his two runs for governor, he just had such a monetary advantage. We're talking 3-1, 4-1, 5-1 advantage. And he's able to be up on TV early and often, you know, getting across the narrative that he wants to get across. And all of his opponents have just had a really hard time matching that or trying to prosecute the case against him. That's not going to be the case this time. And also, the North Carolina electorate has really shown over the past few decades that there is a big difference in how they view state-level races versus national-level races. I think voters are willing to overlook a lot in state level races if they see the person as more competent or capable. On a national level race, they're much more concerned with ideology and philosophy.
He released this 2.5 minute campaign ad Monday, right at 8 o'clock, as people are getting their day started. This is blown out all over social media. He makes a couple of pretty serious claims in that, balancing the budget, fighting for teacher pay. We were talking a little bit about that before the interview. I mean, how can he accept number one state for business? He's taking credit for all of these things that, Andrew, not only did he not do, I mean, he signed the pen, but in some cases, he actively fought against some of the things that the Republican-led legislature were doing, like cutting burdensome regulation. Yet he's now claiming that as his victory and is going to run his whole campaign on that. That seems completely disconnected from reality.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, all the success North Carolina has had has been in spite of Roy Cooper, not because of Roy Cooper. You know, he talks about in his announcement, I worked with Republicans to raise teacher pay. That is just blatantly false. I mean, I couldn't say he worked with Republicans on anything, let alone teacher pay. I mean, we had year after year of budgets that included teacher pay raises, and Governor Cooper vetoed just about every single one. So it almost makes you laugh to hear that from him. But I don't think he's going to be able to get away with that kind of messaging this time.
You talk about a couple of other issues that he's going to have to deal with, some more public facing issues. The DMV was a complete and utter disaster under his watch. Big time struggles now continue with the DMV. State Auditor Dave Bolick's group is apparently crawling floor to ceiling, looking over what's going on there. In the eastern half of North Carolina, you still have thousands of families that are without homes from Hurricanes Matthew and Florence. Matthew happened almost a decade ago. I mean, there are some big time failures that have major implications on real people across the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Disaster recovery is a particular, a particular point where Roy Cooper failed as governor. You know, he came into office in the aftermath of a couple big hurricanes. And then, you know, you look at states like South Carolina. I mean, they were able to rebuild and get people back in their houses years and years faster than North Carolina was. I mean, we're talking 8-9 years after these storms, we've still got people who are caught up in the bureaucratic red tape. And I think it says a lot that when Governor Stein came into office, he decided to just shut down Governor Cooper's signature storm recovery program and launch a brand new one from scratch, because there was just no saving that that mess that Roy Cooper set up.
So when we look at his popularity, I was looking back at a recent Carolina Journal poll. It was done in May, and it showed his approval at 47%. And that was it was about 11-point difference between his unapproval and his favorable approval image. That's incredibly high for any politician to be near the 50% mark, especially somebody that has all of these controversies. Do you think we'll start to see that dip as money is thrown into the state, as mail goes out, as social media ads kick up and expose his record? Or do we continue to have Teflon Roy? Nothing ever sticks to this guy, regardless of the situation.
I think those favorables will absolutely come down. I mean, if you ask me if I was surprised that Roy Cooper got into the race, the answer is no. I fully expected that he would get in, but I do think he's going to come to regret it. You know, he left office with, as you say, very high approval ratings. There's really nowhere to go but down from him, for him. He's never faced $100 million worth of ad spend to really highlight his record. And I think he might look back in a year from now and wonder, why in the heck did I do this?
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, he has had a cushy job, presumably a nice cushy job while teaching up at Harvard. His political record, again, contrary to the things we're talking about this morning, the vast majority of North Carolinians seemingly liked the job that he did, thought he was a charismatic figure. You can see it in his campaign ad. He's got his shirt rolled up. He's walking around in the farm fields with North Carolina families. He's putting a lot on the line with this race.
Oh, he certainly is. And I think if you go back in history, you look at Jim Hunt after his first two terms as governor, he decided to run for Senate against Jesse Helms. And his reputation really took a major hit from that, so much so that he decided he needed to run for governor again. You know, of course, Jim Hunt was a lot younger than Roy Cooper is now, so I can't imagine there would be another governor run for Roy Cooper. But it really can take a hit to your legacy.
Andrew, you've been a longtime political observer here in the state of North Carolina. It's very odd. We're sitting here in the final week of July. August 1st is on Friday. You typically don't see political campaigns, especially for ones in a November election next year, start this early. But with Roy Cooper in, the rumor is that former NCGOP chairman, now head of the RNC, Michael Whatley, is going to be the Republican candidate. It seems like we just completely skip past the primary and the general election is essentially already begun, which is a pretty remarkable timeline.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the primary is early in the cycle. I mean, that's coming up in March. So I'm not super shocked to see campaigning begin over the summer. But yeah, I mean, I fully expected a more competitive primary, especially on the Republican side, once Senator Tillis announced that he wasn't going to run again. But that's kind of the nature of things right now. You know, Democrats have done a pretty good job over the last decade or so, heading off some of these divisive primaries. Republicans really haven't done that nearly as well. And there's pros and cons to it. I mean, one of the benefits of a contested primary is you get some of that battle testing in before the real attention starts. But on the other hand, you know, it does take up a lot of time, a lot of money, and your messaging has to be a little bit different in a primary versus a general. I think we're going to have lots of time in North Carolina in this Senate race to actually get a lot of the arguments out and be able to decide on between these two candidates. So I guess on net, that's a good thing.
Let's talk about North Carolina media. You referenced this in your post that even in the most recent gubernatorial election that Governor Cooper ran in, he wasn't really asked any tough questions. Anytime he would, it was kind of shrug it off. Oh, shucks, kind of. It's Roy Cooper. Don't worry about it. He's been, you know, and that part of that is because of the left-wing bias of so much of North Carolina's media that allowed him to do that. Do you think he's going to have that same advantage when you're going to have, you know, major cable news networks like Fox News, who are incredibly popular, looking in on this race, and when you've got all of this national attention? Do you think that same old media strategy of, oh, shucks, it's just Roy, is gonna play out for the former governor?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, and to your point, if you look at something like the Atlantic Coast Pipeline deal, where Governor Cooper negotiated a $58 million, essentially a slush fund, in exchange for approving the permits on some pipelines, I have to think 15, 20 years ago, the media would have gone really hard at Governor Cooper over something like that. And it just got brushed aside. I mean, there was virtually no scrutiny of Governor Cooper on something like that. But if you look at 2026 Senate race, I mean, the map is really small in 26. And this is the most important race in the entire country. So you're going to have media attention and scrutiny from all corners of the United States in North Carolina this year.
Andrew, tell us a little bit about Longleaf Politics. How'd you get that started? What are some of the things that you cover, and where can folks find out more details?
Yeah, absolutely. So Longleaf Politics is my newsletter, started way back in 2018. It's dedicated to offering a smart, thoughtful perspective on North Carolina politics from a conservative point of view. I encourage everyone to go to longleafpol.com and sign up.
Andrew Dunn, thank you so much for the time this morning. Greatly appreciated. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Some great analysis this morning with Andrew Dunn. We appreciate his time. Again, longleafpol.com is his website. You can also give him a follow over on X as well, at Andrew_Dunn, D-U-N-N. Bringing up some great points this morning on what is set to be a wild race here across the state of North Carolina. We'll jump back into that Roy Cooper video coming up here in just a couple of minutes and dispel again some of these other things that Roy Cooper wants to claim are his legacy. Meanwhile, he actively fought against a lot of those things. So we'll dive into those details coming up here in just a few minutes. Let me tell you about the law group here in Wilmington and thank them for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. When legal challenges arise, trust the law group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. And great news, folks, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com, where they've got a great blog that discusses a variety of legal challenges and issues. You can meet all of the attorneys that work over at the Law Group, a great website over at lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. More on Roy Cooper's official Senate announcement coming up, plus your comments coming in live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live this Tuesday morning and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. The big North Carolina news this morning, former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper is officially running for United States Senate. It was rumored and reported last week from a variety of inside sources to Politico and CNN and a couple of other news outlets that the governor was set to make his official announcement. And well, that's exactly what he did yesterday morning. And so I want to go back to this video, this 2.5 minute video where Roy Cooper, you know, talks about his record, the things that he's done in North Carolina. And let's break down a little bit of what the governor, the former governor, is actually talking about here.
At your expense, it's time for that to change. I grew up in Nash County, working on the farm every summer. My mom was a public school teacher. My dad, a small town lawyer and farmer. It's where I started my family, taught Sunday school for years, and started my law practice that helped everyday people and small businesses. When you made me your attorney general, I prosecuted criminals and took on scammers, big banks, and drug companies. When you made me your governor, we balanced the state budget every year and worked.
Let's stop that right there. He balanced the budget every year. Now, let me explain how the budget process plays out here in North Carolina for those that are not super familiar with it. During Roy Cooper's tenure as governor, Republicans had control in the General Assembly. They had majorities, sometimes super majorities, but throughout the entire time, majorities in both the House and the Senate. So the way that the budget process works in North Carolina, the governor's not involved in it really at all. It is something that is crafted by the General Assembly. It is approved by both chambers, the House and the Senate. They come together, and make a deal, and then they approve it like they would a law. They sign it into law. They pass it through both chambers, and then it goes to the governor's desk at the time, Roy Cooper, for a signature. It's important to note that while Governor Roy Cooper was in office, he vetoed all, I believe, but one budget that was passed by the General Assembly. He did not take part in balancing the budget in North Carolina. That is a complete and total fabrication of the truth. Some may even call it a lie from the former governor. He was not responsible for balancing the budget. I will remind you, prior to Republicans taking control in the General Assembly around 2010, 2012, the state, after 100 plus years of Democrat control, was bankrupt. The state owed hundreds of millions of dollars to the federal government. We had some of the highest taxes anywhere in the southeast half of the United States. Each and every year, the state was spending more money than it was taking in, borrowing money, and living outside of its means. That's what Democrat control looked like in this state. By the way, part of which Roy Cooper was part of back in his time in the legislature. That's what the scene looked like prior to Republicans coming in and taking control. So the idea that Roy Cooper can accept credit for balancing the budget, when not only did he not have any part in that at all, but he actively worked against the North Carolina legislature, actively worked against the General Assembly, vetoing budget after budget after budget when he was in the governor's mansion, is a complete and total lie. He cannot accept credit for something that he did not do, something that he not only did not have a part in, but actively fought against.
The state budget every year and worked with Republicans to raise teacher pay, recruit thousands of better paying jobs, and expand Medicaid to more than 650,000 working North Carolinians.
So let's stop there. Worked with the Republicans to increase teacher pay. Again, another fabrication. As you heard from Andrew Dunn in the previous segment, he vetoed all of the budgets in which Republicans increased teacher pay. When he vetoes a budget, it does not go into effect unless the General Assembly, which they did do multiple times, overrides his veto and puts it into law regardless of what the governor thinks. And it's very interesting that he talks about public education and public school funding, because I would argue that was one of the biggest issues that he had as governor. For many, many months, when you went to the former the website at the time of Governor Roy Cooper, there was a banner across the top of the website that read, to the extent that we were in a state of emergency due to public school funding, that we as a state were dealing with a public emergency like you would for a natural disaster, like you would for a hurricane or a flood, because of Republicans in the North Carolina legislature. So I find it rather rich and ironic that Governor Roy Cooper would try and claim he worked with Republicans to increase teacher pay at the exact same time when he was actively railing against the General Assembly, vetoing their budgets, and making the case that teacher pay wasn't enough. That is a complete and total difference from how he acted when he was in the governor's mansion. That is a complete and total divorce from reality as to how the governor actually acted. And I think that that is an important thing to note when you look at the governor's tenure and the things that he is claiming he did, the things that Governor Roy Cooper is claiming that he was a part of. And I mean, here is an image of what the website used to look like. A state of emergency for public education. Governor Cooper has declared that public education in North Carolina is facing a state of emergency, and he urges North Carolinians to contact their legislature. Reading directly from the website, a state of emergency for public education. In a special address, Governor Cooper calls to action to protect public education amid of the extreme legislature. So which one is it, Roy? Was North Carolina's schools and the state as a whole in a public emergency, a state of emergency over public education funding? Or did you work with the Republican legislature to increase teacher pay? This is another situation where you can't have it both ways. You can't claim and you can't say that you worked with the Republicans and try and build yourself as some sort of moderate, because that's what Roy Cooper's track record is. He wants to continue to portray himself as some moderate individual, just an old shucks, old Roy Cooper, never done anything wrong, just old Roy here, nothing to look at, nothing to see. Yet he wants to take credit for working with the Republicans? What, when he was vetoing budget after budget after budget? You don't have to take my word for it. This is Roy Cooper's words back in 2019 over the exact same issue.
I'm declaring this state of emergency because you need to know what's happening. If you care about public schools in North Carolina, it's time to take immediate action and tell them to stop the damage that will set back our schools for a generation. Here's what's happening in the next few weeks. Their private school voucher scheme will pour your tax money into private schools that are unaccountable.
So that's the governor railing against the Opportunity Scholarship Program, claiming that that's why we're in a state of emergency after all, right? Like when a hurricane destroys the eastern half of the state, or Hurricane Helene ravages western North Carolina, that's when you declare a state of emergency. You don't do it and you don't claim it and you don't put it on your official government website because you have a disagreement with the legislature, which now he's claiming he, I guess, didn't have a disagreement with the legislature. He's saying he worked with them to accomplish all of these goals, that he worked with them to accomplish these increases in public education funding. Again, you can't possibly have it both ways. You can't possibly claim that you had to declare a state of emergency and then at the same time say you worked with the Republican legislature. These are the issues and the inconsistencies that Roy Cooper is going to have to answer for as this campaign kicks off.
But right now, our country's facing a moment as fragile as any I can remember.
Oh, really?
And the decisions we make in the next election will determine if we even have a middle class in America anymore.
So how are we going to not have a middle class in America unless Roy Cooper is elected to the United States Senate? And this is a guy that was out there stumping for Joe Biden, after all. This is a guy that was out there stumping for Kamala Harris. Yet he's going to be the one that is going to protect the middle class? Do you genuinely believe Democrats when they make these claims? They just sat in positions of power for 4 years. For 4 years. Completely mismanaged everything that they were faced with. Completely mismanaged everything that they had to tackle and deal with, from sky-high inflation to COVID-19. And it's now Roy Cooper and the Democrats that need to be back in power to save the middle class. I mean, there's no universe where that statement makes any sense whatsoever. There is no universe where I'm under the illusion that Roy Cooper is fighting for middle-class North Carolinians. He's gonna talk a big game about fighting for the little guy and those damn corporations that are raping the state of North Carolina and pillaging the federal government, getting tax breaks from Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, under his watch, he was giving tax incentives to the tune of $850 million to Apple. Yes, the phone and computer maker, Apple. His record is not a very good one. His record is not one that paints him in the progressive light that he wants to be painted in some sections, and then in other parts wants to be painted as old moderate Roy Cooper. He did a phenomenal job when he was governor painting himself as a moderate. In large part, it was due to our disingenuous, dishonest media in North Carolina that doesn't have the balls to ask a serious question, that doesn't have any interest in actually providing information to the American people, to the citizens and to the people of North Carolina. They never questioned Roy Cooper on this stuff. They allowed him to sit in the governor's mansion, have his little press releases and his little announcements here and there. Very seldomly did you see Roy Cooper actually speak about anything. That was all part of the strategy to keep his popularity as high as it is right now. If you don't speak, if you're not talking to the press, if anytime there is something going on in the media, you've got WRAL and the News and Observer and all of these left-wing outlets that are covering for you, then your record's going to be stellar. Because who the hell's going to criticize you? You've got a couple of outlets that are going to do it. You've got a couple of conservative talk radio stations across the United States or across the state that are going to do it. But the mass media is not. WRAL's not going to. The Raleigh News and Observer isn't going to. The Asheville Citizen Times isn't going to. The Wilmington Star News isn't going to criticize him. Never. They're not going to ask him tough questions. They're not going to press him on, you're declaring a state of emergency over public education and teacher pay, yet you vetoed budget after budget after budget that included pay increases for teachers. That question would never be asked of Roy Cooper. And if it was asked, he wouldn't answer it. He'd give some runaround answer, some word salad response that would not mean anything. And nobody would ever hold him accountable. Nobody would ever hold his feet to the fire. And it's why I am strongly of the mindset, and there's some disagreement on this, and I don't know if I'm right, and we're going to have to watch it play out. I'm not sure Roy Cooper has ever experienced what he's going to deal with in the coming months and, you know, more than a year as we get closer to the Senate race and the general election coming up next November. He's not going to be able to hide behind this completely distorted reality that he wants to claim as his record. The former governor is not going to be able to stand up on stage during a debate and claim that he fixed North Carolina's economy, that he worked with Republicans on teacher pay increases. Governor Roy Cooper, during COVID-19, shut down the state of North Carolina, instructed law enforcement to force people to stay in their homes. That was, of course, thrown out by courts. Shut down churches, shut down small businesses. Meanwhile, this is Roy Cooper in downtown Raleigh in the heat of the COVID-19 pandemic, marching with Black Lives Matter. This is Roy Cooper, who was instructing law enforcement to go around the state of North Carolina and arrest small business owners that were trying to provide for their families, trying to provide for their employees while they were unconstitutionally shut down by his government, protesting with Black Lives Matter and Antifa, which of course would then later turn into the Summer of Peace and Love in 2020, where BLM, Antifa, and other left-wing activist groups burned cities to the ground across North Carolina, firebombed buildings in downtown Raleigh, attacked law enforcement, destroyed small businesses. That's Roy Cooper's legacy. That's what this guy was responsible for when he was in the governor's mansion. So he can spin this whatever way he wants. He can release this this snappy 2.5-minute campaign video talking about how it's his responsibility that the state was number one for business. It's his reason, or his responsibility, while the budget was balanced every year. Teacher pay increases happened under his watch. He can claim all of these things as his own if he wants. But when you battle test this stuff, when you put him on the stage with the presumed Republican nominee who is likely to be Michael Whatley, this stuff's not going to stick. When you've got campaign ads, of which some of them are already out, slamming Roy Cooper over his legacy, slamming him over the things that he was actually responsible for in the state of North Carolina. I don't think this stuff's going to last very long. I don't think he's going to be able to continue with this record of, I did everything right, there's no controversy under my watch, and elect me to be your next United States Senator. Here's one of the ads from the Senate Republicans in Washington, D.C. This was released yesterday morning.
There are people you trust in the driver's seat. Roy Cooper isn't one of them.
I had to learn to drive again.
He crashed schools, revved up your taxes, and took a hard left on crime, letting violent criminals cruise free. Then he floored it on radical gender ideology, letting men race in women's lanes. And when disaster hit North Carolina, Roy hit cruise control and showed up 3 days later,
leaving residents nowhere to go.
Roy Cooper isn't just off course. He's a wreck.
So this campaign started yesterday, and you've already got these hard-hitting ads that are scorching Roy Cooper. I don't know that he's going to be able to deal with this and battle test this for 16 months. Because when you actually press him on his record, when you actually press him on the things that he is and isn't responsible for, you're going to find that that list is very small. And it makes perfect sense. He was a do-nothing governor. Republicans were running the show. They were cutting taxes, cutting overburdensome regulation, relieving pressure for middle-class North Carolinians, cutting business red tape and regulation, lowering the corporate tax rate. All of this happened not because of Roy Cooper, against the will of Roy Cooper. It is an accurate assessment to say that he was a do-nothing governor. And when he did need to do something like, oh, I don't know, help the people of Eastern North Carolina recover from Hurricanes Matthew and Florence, he completely botched it. His North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, NCOR, mismanaged the situation so bad that to this day, there are more than 1,000 people that are still without homes from Matthew and Florence. Hurricane Matthew affected the state in 2016. It has been almost a decade since that storm. And you still, under Roy Cooper's watch, have people that are not back in their homes. That's what Roy Cooper's record actually is. Here's another ad, this one released by the Senate Leadership Fund, again, talking about Roy Cooper's actual record as governor.
He says he's a moderate, but Roy Cooper's record tells a radically different story. Higher taxes, sanctuary cities, and a radical gender ideology. Cooper vetoed a bill to protect girls' sports, vetoed a bill to ban gender transition surgeries for minors, puberty blockers, double mastectomies, mutilating children. Cooper stood with the woke left, endangering our kids. And when it came to keeping violent criminals off our streets, Cooper said no to ICE. Not once, not twice, but 3 times. Illegal immigrant sex offenders, kidnappers, violent predators let go. Because of Roy Cooper's veto. Cooper vetoed tax relief for middle-class families and small businesses. Higher taxes, more illegals, a woke agenda. Roy Cooper masquerades as a moderate, but he's just another radical DC liberal in disguise.
And that ad from the Senate Leadership Fund is absolutely spot on. And because of the friendly media in this state, his track record is that of a moderate. But when you dive into the details, of which we did a little bit this morning and we will do plenty of over the next a couple of months and over the next year as we get closer to that Senate race, his record is very contrary to that. He is a left-wing progressive radical. Doesn't seem like it. Doesn't claim that that's the case. But that's exactly what had happened. And you can look at an alternate reality if Republicans were not in control of the General Assembly during Roy Cooper's time in the governor's mansion. I think you'd be looking at, and I don't think, there's no question about it. You would be looking at a very different state of North Carolina. You would be looking at a state that would be a sanctuary state. You'd be looking at a state that would have sky-high taxes for both corporations and for individuals. You'd be looking at a state that would be pushing radical left-wing things that you see in places like New York and California and Illinois. That's what would be happening and what would have happened in the state of North Carolina if Republicans were not in the General Assembly. I think Roy Cooper is going to have quite a race in front of him. Do I think that he's probably still the front runner in this race? Yes. His name ID is very strong. People have a very, at least as of right now, those things can change, but as it stands right now, he has a very favorable image with a lot of North Carolinians, including a lot of Republicans. And so the question is going to be for not only Michael Whatley, who is set to make an announcement sometime in the next week or so, not only Michael Whatley, but for Republican groups like the Senate majority group, all of these other individual groups that are going to be pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into North Carolina. The question's going to be, can they reframe Roy Cooper? Can they actually expose his record that the media in this state was unwilling to do when he was in the governor's mansion? You spend enough money, you get enough of these images, you get enough of his actual track record out, and I'm of agreement with Andrew Dunn of Longleaf Politics that, yes, his approval rating will start to go down. When you're not out in public very often, when you're not really doing a whole hell of a lot, which is exactly what Roy Cooper's tenure as governor is, it's hard for people to have a negative reaction to you. The time that Roy Cooper was the most visible in the state was during COVID. That's when he was shutting down small businesses, keeping schools closed, having gym owners and small business owners arrested by state highway patrol for having the audacity to want to operate their business and provide for their family. Meanwhile, here's Roy Cooper out protesting with Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Does that meet the track record of a moderate guy? Does that meet the track record of a moderate Democrat, a blue dog Democrat from the South? Hell no, it doesn't. His track record is way worse than many folks in North Carolina believe it to be. And again, that's in large part due to smart work on his behalf and his team's behalf of keeping him completely sheltered and away from the public. And secondly, a very dishonest left-wing media that exists in North Carolina that would go to the ends of the earth to provide cover for people like Roy Cooper. And so the question is, yes, he's been successful in statewide elections, but has he been battle-tested when he has to actually go up against his record? How will it be when Roy Cooper actually has to answer tough questions on the national stage, which is exactly what's going to happen with this Senate race? Yes, gubernatorial races are important, but they don't get anywhere near the eyes or the interest that a Senate race does, especially in a midterm election, when you're going to have Democrats pouring all of their resources into states like North Carolina and Georgia. Those are the two of the races that they're really going to put a lot of effort into. And that's going to bring a national spotlight to this race. That's going to bring a national spotlight to Roy Cooper's record, which is less than stellar. And I'd encourage you this morning, again, to head on over to longleafpol.com. That's Andrew Dunn's website. He has this article that we talked about, and you can see as you scroll down what voters need to know about Roy Cooper. Talks about COVID-19, the Department of Transportation, the failure with hurricane recovery, so on and so forth. Some of his bigger political scandals, the slush fund with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, trying to drive, change in the General Assembly by bullying Democrats who then, of course, become Republicans like Trisha Cotham. So this is going to be a very interesting race to follow. It is going to be a lot. You are going to see an incessant amount of television, radio, and social media advertisements. You are going to get an insane amount of mail and an insane amount of text messages over the coming months as we get closer to this primary election and, of course, the general election November of next year. We will keep you up to date with all of it. We'll be diving into Roy's actual track record, the things that he was actually responsible for, and providing and shining a little bit of light on that so that voters here in North Carolina can make an informed opinion and an informed decision as to who they're actually going to support in that Senate election coming up next year. And that was part of my daily email this morning. If you're not receiving those, head on over to the website, nickcraig.com, and sign up for the morning line. That's my daily email. It goes out at 6:30 every morning. And at the top of every email, I have what I call my morning take. And I wrote this: Roy Cooper has officially entered the race for United States Senate, setting the stage for what is expected to be the most expensive Senate contest in American history. While the former governor is trying to frame his record as a success, many of the state's real accomplishments came under the strong conservative leadership of the General Assembly, not because of Cooper. Don't be fooled. Cooper's record reveals a left-wing agenda that is at odds with North Carolina values. I stand by that statement, and I think a lot of folks feel similar to that. So you can head on over to the website this morning, nickcraig.com. You'll see a link on the homepage of the website. Get daily NC headlines and podcast episodes. It's the morning line. It's free. Just pop your email address in there, and you'll get that delivered to your inbox around 6:30 each and every weekday morning. So strap in. It is going to be a wild ride here in North Carolina, and appreciate you sticking alongside me as we continue to walk through this process. It's going to be a real interesting one. Again, busy day in the North Carolina General Assembly, potentially 14 veto overrides. I'll be keeping you up to date with that over on my X account at x.com/Nicholas M. Craig, and we'll have all the coverage coming up right here tomorrow on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a busy Tuesday edition. Thanks to Andrew Dunn with Longleaf Politics for joining us this morning. And thanks to the Law Group right here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a Tuesday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day.